I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to another Collecting Addicts podcast. I'm reliably informed this is number 19. So we'll call it the Paul Hardcastle, shall we?
Yes, I knew
going,
it.
We're going straight in on motorsport and stuff we've done this weekend because this allows me to tell you that I went to the British Superbike round at Donington yesterday with my youngest. And I have to say, as I was trundling up the M5 and it was hot and I thought, well, what else we could be doing? I was a little bit worried that I'd made the wrong call. I was so wrong. I had the most surprisingly enjoyable day out. Well, I knew it was going to be good, but I was just so pleasantly surprised. The moment we walked through the gates, Donington was just in full bloom. You forget what a lovely circuit Donington is. It's in that natural bowl just by the airport. All the greens were verdant. The grass was perfectly kept. Jonathan Palmer really does, he takes pride in his circuits, and I really admire him for that. But the car park was rammed outside. It just felt like I'd gone back 30 years to the heyday of British circuits and them being absolutely full. So, I don't want to be like acting like the PR department of British Superbikes, but they put on a fantastic display yesterday. The paddock was so family-friendly, you know, just really good eggs. Everyone's interested in little people, adults as well. The racing was exceptional. I watched some race for 13 to 16-year-olds where it was mayhem. They were sort of four abreast, elbowing each other through the craners. And they came over the line and someone high-sided as they were going over the line and took out someone else. It was just wonderful. So I'm not on a percentage, but this is a rallying call. If you get the chance to go to Superbike Round, a British Superbike Round this year, please do so, because it might not be on your list of things to do, but I absolutely loved it. What else did people do this weekend?
So I watched a bit of the Nürburgring 24 Hours this weekend.
Yeah.
So actually, it was an interesting weekend. There was so much motorsport on that wasn't F1. We're very, very worried and sort of concerned about those who were affected by the floods in northern Italy. It did give other motorsports an opportunity to shine. So whilst I was in Croft in the northeast of England, watching Finlay, one of my sons, racing his Caterham, we watched a little bit of the Nürburgring 24 Hours. I think it's unique. So it's mostly sports car and touring car racing, but world sports car GT racing, there's like two or three classes, maybe three classes. GT3 racing in Europe, there's one class. Nürburgring 24 Hours, there's 20 classes. It's such an enormous diversity of cars. There's about 30 or GT3 cars at the front. Wow. It's gone from being, it's about 200 cars in the race, maybe slightly fewer than that, 25 kilometers all the way around. There's nothing like it anywhere. In any other kind of way that compares to it.
So it's still 200 starters, is it?
It may be about 180, I think. Yeah. But it, we obviously did it. Monkey and I did it 21 years ago in that Caterham. When we did it 21 years ago, there was somebody had a VW Caravelle bus. Somebody had an Audi 200 Turbo Estate.
Oh, cool.
Most of that Most of that madness
is gone. Original Mini, a Trabant.
Yeah. Caterhams, which are all gone. But this year, there was one legend still running. Those of you who watched this will have seen it. One of the interesting things about the race this weekend, because and a lot of the social media and the memes and stuff going around on TikTok and Instagram were clearly from people who were talking about, well, hey, I wanted to watch Imola, but look, this madness is on. So you'll see stuff in the middle of the night where it's a long circuit and most of it's in a mountain and a forest. So the rescue trucks have to drive on the circuit. They don't red flag it. They just have these slow zones or sort of safety cars holding people up. But otherwise, the racing is just going on past these people. So it looks utterly mental if you're not used to it. There are a couple of points of interest. If you love it, you love it. And it's just like nothing on earth. And Finney Cam, my boys looked at it and they know that we used to go and do it and stuff, but they kind of really appreciate it now. Just looking at the social media explosion about it, I think was extraordinary. A couple of things of particular note, though. First time in 21 years that a German-made car did not win the Nürburgring 24 Hours. The one by Ferrari 296. Quite poignantly, I thought, run by the team Fricadelli, which is owned by the former partner of Sabine, somebody who, obviously, nice. Monkey, you know incredibly well, but we used to race against together when we were there. So it was quite poignant to see the first almost non-German being run by their team. And fantastic. David Pittard, great British GT driver on the lineup. They beat the M4 GT3 by 26 seconds.
After 24 hours.
And umpteen yellow flag zones and slow zones. And there were this year quite, I mean, when we've been going there for donkey's years. Chris has done more than I. We've done a lot of 24 hour races there. It is unique because there's such a performance differential between the fast cars and the slow cars. This year, two things happened. Some of the pro drivers did say, look, you know, we love you guys, the amateurs and the slower cars, but hold your line, because there's quite a lot of stuff on social media of some interesting driving and some quite unpleasant looking shunts. The biggest one, though, was this poor team in this Dacia or Dacia, depending on your preference for pronunciation, Logan. So it's a little old Renault 19, whatever the Dacia Logan is, tiny little engine, probably doing 120 miles an hour on the straight, got collected by one of the Porsche GT3s driven by Heinrich, who was Porsche Junior. He won Joe and Craig Clark last year. Done two races
in a lower low, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, that might have been his grandfather. Possibly.
You sent us that video about six something this morning.
Yeah, I did. Well, yeah, you know.
Yeah, well, I was up.
We're all up. We're all up, Neil.
Yeah, well, some of us are working. So Nürburgring 24 hours. So I think it was great that it brought the Nürburgring, which is the most extraordinary racing circuit in the world, and the Nürburgring 24 hours. Even 10 years ago, a lot of very serious people in motorsport sort of dismissed it a bit as, well, it's just a big club race, isn't it? No. It's not a big club.
Do you remember when you got stroppy with Autosport when they didn't cover it or something?
Oh, God, yes. I did, didn't I?
Their editor, because you were writing there saying, how dare you not treat this as a serious race?
I did. I'm glad you... Yeah, I was. And
did you win it? Right. Was that the problem?
I think we might have had a good result that year, Manish, if I'm honest with you. The two did coincide.
Possibly. We might have been the top British team that year. I can't remember. Yeah. Those two events are completely unconnected. And any suggestion to the contrary is unworthy.
Can I add one thing about that race? I think I just don't have any sympathy for these pro drivers that say, hold your line, do what you do. The best endurance, you know, we heard Richard Atwood talk on Friday,
yeah, we did.
Event at Bicester, which with Porsche Club GB. And his stories of driving are just incredible. And make you realise that those were gladiators, those people. You drive a 917
totally.
With your ankles in front of the front axle line. Every time you get in, it's trying to kill you. That generation knew that in a fast car, it's your responsibility to get around the slow car. You have to assume that that thing in front of you is driven by an irrational being, a human, and it could do anything. And the better drivers will get around it without getting collected by it. And that's the way it is. If you rely on asking someone to do something in front of you on a racetrack as being the reason why you'll go past them flat out, that to me is insanity. If you write that down, why would you buy into it?
Yeah.
So I have no sympathy whatsoever. And I think, do you know what? I remember interviewing Olaf Mantai about this about 10 years ago when it was a lot more GT3 cars. And it was getting very serious. And I expected him to say, I want all the idiot amateurs to go. We should have a great big 450 car GT3 race because we're the legends. And he went, I've got no sympathy for all these little lads. We all had to get around them. They can get around them. And actually, if you look at this event, it's the colour and the variety that makes it special. It's not us in the fancy cars. He was so right when he said that.
He is.
Chris, you've got to tell your story, Harris Monkey, just about Mansell and Senna, the same thing. Basically, the concept of being overtaken, announcing.
I love this. So Nigel, who's a you know, so much cleverer than people would realise, and the way he thought about his driving, he had this phrase to me, and it was in a motorhome in Pembrey, of all places, and he said, it's all about how you present yourself. He talked about presenting the car.
Yep.
And that's why Senna was just the best. He said, because he had the iconography of overtaking already. So he had the car. Everyone knew it was Senna's car, the yellow helmet. He said, the moment you saw that shit in your mirror, you just got out of the way. And I think Nigel said that he would always try and present his car quite often over-aggressively. Some drivers choose to look like they're just going to drive into the back of you. There's different ways of doing it.
Yeah, it's body language. It's car body language. And Monkey and I talked about when we were working racing in the ring. And you can give the car body language.
Yeah.
And the best there, particularly there, even at night, you can convey a certain degree of seriousness and sensibleness and so forth, and it does work. So yeah, I'm with Chris. I'm with you. I think it would spoil the race and ruin it if we said we're going to have the big cars over here and the little cars over there, and too many of the. I suspect Lauren Heinrich, who trashed this Dacia Logan, he's a young kid, and actually I saw one of the reports today to say maybe we should make them do more races, and actually maybe we should make them do a race in a little BMW 2 series against the G3 cars to see what it feels like. But yeah, but in terms of F1 being off and people seeing that amazing track and that amazing race, fantastic.
Can I add one more reason why you need to keep the colour in there? I heard this story. It might be apocryphal, but I think I'm reliably informed it's true that in the 90s, when the race really was quite rogue, and there were several people that used to drive their cars to the circuit, do the race, and then go home again, one of whom was this legend in a Merc 450 SE, SLC. So the 4-seat SL, he had a hard top with a roll cage in it. It was an automatic, and he would drive it from Southern Germany, do the 25 race, and just go home again afterwards.
Yeah, that was there when we raced in 2002.
Yeah, he actually did Silverstone 24 Hours the year that Edward ploughed a new line down the hangar straight. He was there that year as well. Anyhow, so what happened was there's a second gate to get onto the circuit down at Brideshite. So, you know, with the bridge at the lowest part of the circuit. Someone in a local bar had a few too many beers and got in his E30, got through the barrier and managed to complete two laps of the 24-hour race as a civilian drunk in the 3 Series before the organisers got him off.
That's like 20 minutes. It took 20 minutes to spot him.
He thought he was driving home. That's a worst thing.
You know, I'm embarrassed to say I've never been to the Nürburgring.
Do you know what? As a spectator event, I'm not sure. It doesn't match up necessarily to Le Mans and Classic Le Mans because it is very German. You know,
it's quite really German. I was going to say that.
That's not mean that German aren't people great, but it is culturally their thing.
Very.
I think as an English person there, unless you were getting with the right bunch, you might have a tricky experience.
Yeah.
The cars don't have the raw speed that the Le Mans cars have. You know, when you go to Le Mans, you're seeing stuff doing over 200 miles an hour and it looks spectacular. You have to really be into your racing at the Nürburgring, I think, to get that same sense of speed. Mm-hmm. But equally, if you go to places like the compression in the foxhole, I defy anyone to see a car go flat out through that and not be impressed.
Yeah.
We should all go.
Yeah, we should do. We should go.
Good to a Spartan day, yeah. Cool.
What else did people do this weekend? Edward, you went to a polo match.
Well, I was invited. It's not my sort of thing, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. And actually, what you do expect to see at a polo match is a very interesting car park. And there was a very interesting car park. I sent you a photo of a selection of cars from there. There was also, I'm not very good with my Range Rovers. What's the old, let me get the photo of it here.
Was it a Velar?
No. It was this one here. There we go.
P38,
but look, green wheels. That's a bit of you, Neil.
Yeah, that's like, that's officially the worst ever Range Rover.
Yeah, I know, but it had three Goodwood GRRC stickers in the window. The the polo member's badge.
Nice. That's probably the Holland and Holland version.
I bet it was. Yeah, it looked very fancy. I didn't share that photo with you.
No.
Anyway, I enjoyed watching Juan Carlos and two Carlos and and a few chuckers. It was very enjoyable.
I did watch the Indy 500. So the quali for that, and this thing goes on for about 3 weeks, isn't it? I don't really understand.
Month of May.
Yeah, but I did watch that. I had a mate out there, and he was sort of trying to inform me of what goes on, because I'm not really sure. I mean, they are officially the ugliest race cars.
Oh, absolutely.
That Cornetto thing that's on, you know, it's like this sort of pointy...
It's like a dog antiseptic.
Yeah, like, yeah, your dog's got an infection in its leg thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, was it this weekend, actually, isn't it? They've shortened
The race is in the evening after Monaco, traditionally, yeah. Right. And, Alex Palou did a 234-mile-an-hour.
Yeah, they're quick, aren't they? And probably, the cars sound better, probably. Are they still... They hybridy things. I should
know. They're just turbo. They're
turcharged,
aren't they?
Yeah.
So F1 pretty much kept its head down for the past week.
Well, there's just one tiny, teeny, tiny story that was brewing over the weekend, which hit today. I don't know if you saw, but there are rumours that Lewis Hamilton's been offered £40 million to go to Ferrari.
Oh, come
on! And he might do a straight swap with Charles Leclerc.
Yes.
What do we think of that?
I think it's a no-brainer. I think if Lewis Hamilton goes to Ferrari, I think you will see the viewing figures quadruple.
I don't know whether he'll win his eight with it. I don't know whether that's better for him.
I don't think it matters, does it? They just see Lewis Hamilton and Ferrari.
Anyone wants to drive for Ferrari, don't you?
With this race, though? I want to end my career with Ferrari, because... That's not very positive for Ferrari, is it? Because it sort of suggests that these people are already a bit over the hill.
I don't think that's how I would translate that. I would say just basically it was more of a center phrase, which is no driver's career is complete without driving for Ferrari. And I think just Senna had said that to Luca a few days before he was killed, because what he was trying to say was, I've got one more team in me. He was certainly never going to go to Ferrari to go and lose. No way.
No.
And Lewis,
when you're saying that you want to meet the king or the queen before you die, it's something you want to do, isn't it?
Even if they're making consistently not very good cars and not very good decisions.
Well, exactly. Well, you hear that expression, I want to end my career with Ferrari, what I hear is, I want Ferrari to end my career.
Are
you sure you're not dyslexic?
I'm dyslexic, so it's what I hear.
And at the moment, I think that probably will happen, Chris.
Yeah, they're blessed.
No, it would be exciting, wouldn't it? It'd be great.
I think
quite like the sound of it.
I like the sound of it, but I think they'd fall out over one key issue, and that is what Lewis wears. Because Ferrari's got its new couture range. It's been at Milan, hasn't it? You can buy a lot of leather onesie with a hole where you do a poo through. And is Lewis going to wear that? Or is Lewis going to have his own fashion brand? How's it going to work?
You went to the wrong fashion show, Chris.
Oh, sorry. That was the other one.
Nappy show, exactly.
S&M, not Milan. I just make a note of that.
Don't Ferrari need better drivers, though? We talked about this last week, didn't they? You know, maybe for Ferrari, it's a good thing.
Yeah. I just...
He doesn't make mistakes, Lewis. Not really.
Lewis for eight.
Lewis for eight. I agree. But that was a brewing story. The one thing I would say about Indianapolis is I don't really get it either, but I firmly believe that if a lot of people buy into something and I don't quite understand it, it's worthy of investigation. And I'm definitely curious, because the idea of stuff doing 230 miles an hour close contact, it's immensely skillful. Yeah. Anyone that's driven with those spotters in your ears, you know, you've got people talking to you, telling where to go, it's bizarre. It's really difficult.
But Chris, apparently as a viewing spectacle, I mean, I've never been. It is supposed to be, I mean, you can see the cars for the whole lap.
It's mind-blowing.
It kind of moves building up. It's so loud because it is
mind-blowing.
Massive. Everyone I know who've gone to see it has just said, oh my days.
It's on my list, but I would implore everyone, if you can find this, I don't know whether it's available online, or maybe I'll try and post it somewhere. There was a great columnist in, I think it's Car and Driver, in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, called Gene Shepherd. He was also a writer, not just about cars. And he writes about, it's one of the best pieces of motion writing I've ever consumed. Gene Shepherd writes about going on his first Indy 500, which is a rite of passage for his father, taking him to his first Indy 500 as a spectator. And he describes the journey and the experiences. It's such pungent writing. If you can find it or read it, it's one of the best things you'll ever read. Gene Shepherd, his first experience of going to the Indy 500.
I mean, the place we should all be going is the Isle of Man next weekend.
Ooh. I'm going.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. That I've done that. That is mind-blowing that humans are doing that shit.
It's extraordinary. I almost can't bring myself to watch it. I'm just so scared for them.
Chris, can we send Nilo with you?
You can send this Neil. My Nilo's decided he can't come, bless him. So, but I'm going with a buddy. I've not been before.
It's really good.
I was with McGuinness yesterday, not Paddy, the talented one. And the way they talk about it is just so blasé. They did the Northwest 200, was it 2 weeks ago? And through the speed trap, bearing in mind the Northwest is about as wide as a go-kart track, through the speed trap, that one of the bikes was doing 212 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And they were all, I was asking, so on the British Superbike thing, apparently it's mandatory to wear an airbag suit now. That's part of the conditions of racing. But this guy fell off at Redgate in front of us, had a rather nasty high side, and landed, and his suit didn't inflate. So I turned to him and I said, what's going on? Oh, they all disconnect them because they don't like them.
Different species. It's a totally different species.
A totally different breed.
So is John racing next weekend?
He is, and he's on form. He's happy. He's 51 years old. He's undoubtedly the coolest human being that's involved in motorsport of any type.
Yeah,
the way he talks, his turn of phrase. He's brilliant. He's a ruthless piss taker.
And I take it you're riding out.
I'm going to take a bike, yep. And then when we get there, I think we'll probably borrow something that can go off-road a bit. And then we'll get taken around and shown some spots around the island. I have to say, this is my Gene Shepherd rite of passage going to the Indy 500.
Yeah, that sounds quite cool.
I've wanted to go to the Isle of Man all my life, going as a punter, taking the packet, steam packet ferry, whatever it is. It's going to be an experience. So I'm looking
forward to it. Enjoy.
Now, we're moving on to, it just says here in my notes, new Caterham. I'm not aware there is one, but I think there is a man here who's going to tell us.
So this is the story that was announced a couple of weeks ago. Caterham Cars, which has just got a new owner.
Chinese.
Japanese, yeah.
Japanese.
Yeah, it's a Japanese importer, basically.
It's a dealer.
So they've announced that they've signed a deal with the chap Gianarelli. Remember the Gianarelli car? Couple of years ago.
Yeah, I've got to be careful here, actually. I've forgotten this. I have made a film about that, but we never published it. Sorry.
Yeah. So Caterham have announced a deal with this chap to be a designer of future projects. And I guess the speculation is it's going to be the new 7. So we've been here before, and actually I've personally been here. I'll come to in a second. So I mean, Caterham, the Lotus 7 launched in 1957. And as a kit car, largely because of the tax consequences. If you built your own car, it avoided tax. And it was a cheap way of Colin Chapman shifting metal to fund all the racing, all those kind of things. Early 70s, when Lotus wanted to go a bit up market, their main sales agent, their main dealer, which was a company called Caterham Cars, they were a Lotus dealer, Graham Nern, decided to buy the rights and very famously did a deal with Colin Chapman. Bought the rights to then manufacture and distribute the kits. And it's now this year, it's 50 years of the Caterham 7. They've had a go at replacing it before. Many of you remember the 21. Hmm. It was called the Caterham 21 because that was the sales target they didn't quite meet. I think they probably sold about under 20, not many more than that. It was basically a Caterham 7 with actually some quite nice looking bodywork, but it didn't really. And then unfortunately, the Lotus Elise came along and that sold about 35,000. So that didn't go very well.
Quite a pretty car, the 21.
It was pretty car. And it was sort of like a 7, but not quite as good. It was a bit heavier. And then about the turn of the century, I got involved in trying to persuade Caterham and Reynard Racing Cars to develop a new car. And so I put them together and we spent a lot of time with Adrian Reynard and some of his designers and engineers. This was their absolute peak of their powers and making racing cars. And Caterham had money at that point and we had sales. And they came up with a design for a carbon fiber monocoque sports car. It would have retailed early 2000s for about 25 grand. I mean, it was extraordinary. We had I had a little model. I'm trying to find it earlier on. I've lost it.
Wait there. How? How do you make a carbon tub car sell it 25?
20 grand, exactly.
No, it wasn't 20 grand. It's a bit more than 25. That. 25.
Also, wait there. Tuco's not been well. Just tell us he's all right.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Look at you. Bounce back.
Is he back on form?
He's back on form.
Good. Chris, continue with your story about the car. So, 25 grand.
So the guy, Kieran Salter, who was the engineer at Reynard behind a car called a Strathcarron. Some of you might remember Strathcarron or Strathkieran.
I went to see that. That was unbelievable.
So all the Strathkieran, as it was called in Reynard. So Kieran Salter's now got a brilliant business at Silverstone doing composites and lots of clever engineering stuff. So we designed, it was designed, a little model of it was made. And then unfortunately, Reynard went pop in the aftermath of their US market disappearing post 9/11. Most interestingly, and this is on the internet, and please God, no one look at it, because there was a film made of it by the BBC of this discovery and the journey between two companies and trying to design it and so forth. Ends in tears because there was no car because Reynard went bust and Caterham ran out of money. But in it, you'll see moi wearing the worst suit ever made.
Gotta find it.
Sold.
How old were you?
Old enough to know better.
We'll try and put a photo in here somewhere.
Hugo Boss,
here or here.
It was worse than Hugo Boss. It might have been Man at Jaeger or something like that.
We'll put a photo of you in, Chris, here somewhere.
Yeah, to editor, let's see that suit. I'm hoping
to find it.
I'm hoping the point being,
I want it to be light turquoise. I want it to be massively pleated trousers, wide, a big, thick, chunky turn up, and maybe four single breasted with four
button, four button, four buttons.
It might have had four buttons.
Yeah, button four is the worst single breasted.
It wasn't turquoise. It was like a sort of a beigey, tobacco-y sort of
Max
color, a bit like
Max Headroom.
Wall behind Manish. I think the film is called Driven to Win, or if you just Google the Caterham BBC program, it will come up. And somewhere in there's a bit of me racing at Thruxton, which isn't that bad. But the me walking into the workshop at Reynard with Simon and Adrian, a whole bunch of other people in that suit. So, yeah. So I say to Caterham, good luck with the new 7. It's a very, very tough gig, I think. You know, I'm a massive fan of the 7. I think we all are. I don't think you can really easily replace it.
I presume this is an electric thing.
I guess it's going to have to be, although you
obviously put this topic in, Chris. Have you even studied this? Our summary, Neil, you've obviously Googled it as well. And all I can find is they're not replacing the 7. They're building an electric thing that doesn't look like a 7 at all.
The orange thing that's like an autocast.
Yes, yes.
But maybe that's a different thing. It's like a Caterham 21 again.
I mean, I hope that's true. My sense, and those I talk to who are close to the matter, as the Financial Times often says that there are lots of boring technical and other regulatory safety reasons why the 7 may have a limited life, which I hope isn't true.
So now it's the Range Rover, the 7 and the Golf.
We hope not.
In all seriousness, though, reinventing an icon is... it's fool's gold, isn't it? How often does it work? Very few companies have managed it. You can argue that Land Rover was brave and clever to do what it did with the new Defender, because I know it's not for everyone, but if they put another box on wheels, we'd have all laughed at them. I think the 911 is the only one that consistently works because it's been around long enough to be allowed to evolve. But evolving is very different to reinventing. Yep. Evolution is something that designers can work with. But deciding to reinvent something, especially if something is great and as recognisable as a 7, very dangerous game.
Yeah, and you'll always sell. I think in 2021, they took 650 orders. And in 2001, they took about 600 orders, and it kind of oscillates around there. And as long as there's something you can put into an engine, I mean, the big problem might be, who do you get an engine and gearbox from? So they're down to sort of Mazda engines. They've all got 5-speed gearboxes now rather than 6-speed. So there's, at some point, where do you find the bits to put in it? So, but replacing an Icon is, I think, is really, really hard. And the project in 2002 didn't work in part because it was, would have proved too expensive and trying to find the people to do it, blah, blah, blah. So long live the 7.
So I think we'll all be dead and they'll still be making Caterham 7s. I think it's like the cockroach of the automotive industry. You can't kill the Caterham because they're always 20 grand. They're always magic to drive. They'll always find a way through the rules and regulations and laws. It will always exist.
That we should do their marketing.
Should do their marketing. When Neil quite rightly says that, if it then didn't exist, that would make it even more painful for me, because it's the stuff that you assume that will always be around, that when that stops, you go...
Oh, I think it's brilliant car. Brilliant. Yeah. Car.
But surely the... I don't know if you can... I guess you can still build something and put a Q plate on it. So there'll always be a...
You can build it. If you don't need a Q plate, you go to your local SVA centre, it gets tested and it gets a proper number plate now.
Yeah. Although that is a conversation another time, that Q plate, there's something going on in the background that, with my Motorsport UK hat on, we've been aware of. Something going on with the Q plate, which means that everybody who's rebuilding a car, an old car, so any resto mod thing, there's some suggestion that the DVLA might say we need a Q plate on it. Q plate existed years ago to protect people from bodged cars. I need to do a bit more research and we'll come back and talk about it, but it's a real issue for those who are doing resto mods that they might have to have a Q plate on a car, but yeah.
The only rule is never drive a car with a Q plate.
Exactly. There's nothing looks worse.
Yeah.
I thought it was terrible.
To have your initials and then the number 77 afterwards. That was the only thing that could be worse.
Yeah.
You're such a motherfucker.
It's really... Yeah, that's bad. But Q is, you may as well just have dickhead written on your name.
I gave up.
On to favourite mud flaps.
Cockroach is not a good look. Cockroach is not a, I think we need to work on that advertising.
I mean, as a positive, the cockroach campaign.
What's positive about a cockroach?
It never dies.
It's indestructible.
When I was four years old, I trod on one, it didn't live.
Chris, when I was 4 years old, I was in India. My aunt moved. Oh, I'm still traumatized by this. She moved a painting in the living room, and a fucking 6-inch cockroach flew across the living room and bounced off my forehead. Okay, I was 4. And I thought that was literally the last moment I was going to live. It was disgusting. Went bing, like that.
I didn't think a cockroach could be 6 inches.
My God, you have not seen the cockroach.
He was only 4. It might have been 5.
That cockroach will still be alive.
Yes. Do you think cockroaches say to each other, "You remind me of a Caterham 7?
Yeah.
In a positive way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not into cockroaches. Manish, you've just basically described Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. That's in India and there are cockroaches. Were you in that?
Oh, it's the only insect I have.
Right, we're now moving on. You're allowed one Ferrari to drive for the rest of your life. This is open to interpretation.
Daily driver.
So we're going to get the really lengthy one that's been overthought out the way first. Neil Clifford.
Yeah, it's the 458. It's not the 456, just to be clear.
Got it.
Not to be confused with the shitty 456 in automatic.
Right.
How can that be your answer? You said you'd be buried in an FF. I didn't even want to put it in the WhatsApp chat. I was sure of your answer.
If you just give me a minute, I will explain why that is my answer. Ideally, the Speciale, really. But anyway, if I've got a standard 458, it's the last of Luca, right?
Yeah.
The last of normally aspirated.
Yep.
But the key actually is it's small.
Yeah.
And actually, when it comes to cars, size matters. But in the opposite sense of the rest of the world, in a way, because it's like driving a Dino, a 458. You can see everything. You've got those tiny little beautiful front wings. It feels small. And the problem with most Ferraris now, whether it be F12, 812, 599 even, they're too big. They're too fucking big. The 458 is wonderful. It's got a decent noise. It's not a magnificent noise. It's not a 355 in truth. It's not a 360 Stradale. It's not even a 430, but it's decent noise. It's got a lovely cabin. It's a pretty car. The only negative on a 456, frankly, and it's reliable, the only negative is it's got a shit stereo. You literally may as well not have a radio. The Bluetooth is terrible. You can't make a phone call. But apart from that, it's the only negative I can find with a 458. Pretty, reliable, small, decent engine. Luca de Montezemolo. Get one in. Don't get a red one. Get a silver one or a blue one. And you could drive that car forever. So that's what I would choose.
I'm very disappointed. It is wrong. And you know, I just thought you'd make a better pick.
I have
maybe
to.
Maybe you go next then, Ed.
I'm endorsing Clifford here. I think
no, I'm going to go last.
Made a strong argument. No, you can go now, Lovett. Come on.
No, I'm going to go last. Manish.
No, you're not. You're going now. Go.
We haven't put a budget on this one.
No, there's no budget.
No, but you haven't put a budget on it.
There wasn't supposed to be a budget. It was just one Ferrari.
Exactly.
And he's going La Ferrari then.
No, and do you know what? I drove to Burgundy 2 weeks ago in the Tuttle 911 and back, and a friend of mine was sat in the car with me, and another friend was driving behind in a 993, and they had their mobile phone mounts out, and they wanted to put the nav on. And I was like, "There's no fucking way. There's no nav coming on. We're pulling off in the first service station, and we're buying a map."
Oh, nice.
That's how we're doing this. And we went into the first fucking service station. They didn't sell any maps. So five service stations later, we eventually found a map. But I knew exactly the one I wanted. And we'll come on to this with one of the next topics as well. Like, I don't want navigation. I don't want Bluetooth. I don't need a stereo. And the Tuttle 911, which I've been driving every day, I don't need a I don't need a really, really modern fast car. I just want a car that makes me feel happy. And
Edward, stop you 1 second. So far, your answer to what Ferrari is a 911.
No, it's not. It's not. I've got two because I'm needing to try and be slightly practical. I think ideally it would be a 250 short wheelbase.
Daily driver.
A daily driver. It's easy to drive. It's light steering wheel. It's fast. It's dynamic. It's comfortable. The only thing, to be slightly more practical, I might have a 275 GTB4 cam because it's got a little bit more leg room. So if I'm not tall, but a short wheelbase, you still, if you're 6 foot, it's cusp whether you can drive it comfortably. But a 4 cam, you know, as long as it works, which there's no reason why it shouldn't work if you maintain it properly, will put a smile on your face every day. It will start. It's light steering. It's fast. It's dynamic. It's beautiful. And why would I wouldn't want any other car ever?
There you go. I can endorse that argument.
I'd
like to know what the budget to run it was, but there we go.
It doesn't matter. There is no budget. This is not a two-car garage with 38p to spend.
Manish, what are you going for?
You'd park it on the Fulham Road, would you, and go for a coffee?
Yeah. You don't get parking tickets in a 275 GTB4 cam. You just put a Peter paper on the front saying, "Gone for lunch."
I'm terribly sorry.
Yes. Well, and there's a little Cyrillic note left afterwards in the parking space. We've taken your car.
I owe you.
Exactly.
Manish, what are you going for?
Well, you know, Luca rather plugged a hole in my car du jour last week, right at the end, being photobombed by Luca Montezemolo. Which car would you like? That one? No. With that transmission? No. I can't actually have the car that I own. So oddly, I think I've actually only ever driven one Ferrari in my entire life, and it was 275 GTB quad cam, and it was black, and it's owned by a friend, and it was just the most beautiful drive ever. So Lovett and I are going to share a car. He said to me he drives it, and he does drive it all the time. Always starts. It's maintained by someone that you know in South London. It spends a bit of time in and out of that garage. But it's just that in terms of presence, it's very difficult to find a car. And his is black with red leather. So it's just this beautiful, beautiful looking thing. We just look at it. I'm always squinting because there's always a new angle with that car. And I believe you probably could take that on little trips or long trips, and it would be absolutely fine. Yeah.
It is the prettiest Ferrari. It beats the short wheelbase. Everyone gets excited on the short wheelbase because of the value thing.
I'm out.
275 is prettier.
I don't think it is.
You think a 275 is prettier than a short wheelbase?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Distended.
I can't. It's just
no, Monkey, I'm with you on this one. Yeah. I hardly ever agree with your
math. Looks like the body's just been lobbed on the chassis.
275 looks like a woman. A short wheelbase looks like a man.
Yeah, that makes sense. Chris is probably going to go 275 as well then.
What's wrong with that? Like a bit of both playing now? Right, here we go.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to go. We've got two 275s and we've got a 458.
Good choice, Manish. Very well chosen.
Chris Cooper, what are you going for?
Yeah, I'm not going for the BMW 320 diesel touring on this one, I'm afraid. Sorry, Edward and Manish. Everyone's daily driver is different, but it's got to do everything. It's got to do a bit of everything. And it's got to be quite practical. It's got to work. It's got to sort of do everything. And
No, it doesn't. In principle, it does in the car magazine world, but you can still choose a car and adapt your behavior to meet the inadequacies of the car.
Yeah, no, in my world, it does. It has to do a bit of everything, which is why my daily drivers tend to be estates with a bit more, not because I'm always carrying people, but just you never know what's around the corner. Needs might arise.
So you're going to choose one?
It's an FF.
I thought you were going lower Sloane Street then, and the car we know that's parked.
And I tell you what tipped the balance. It was that BMW M Coupe thing.
Yes, that's lovely.
And I thought it's not a very good attempt at producing something which is not as good as an FF. When you see that, you think I even more want an FF now because. Mm. If you bought one of those and you drove around and somebody had an FF, you think, oh, I've done it wrong again.
Okay.
I think we should, one week, we should do
what's your favorite
successful
FF?
One-offs. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your favorite FF?
Yeah.
What's your...
Okay.
Your one was for sale again, Monkey, recently.
It was, yeah.
Matthew, Matthew
asked me to buy it back.
Yeah, he asked me to buy it as well.
Said that one of my younger children had an accident.
It's not fussy who buys it.
Right. I think you're vaguely in the right place, many of you. FF, obviously, on my list. I've decided to interpret this in an adult fashion like Chris Cooper. I've not decided to approach it like Edward Lovett in a fantasy world. So I would love, the best Ferrari I've ever driven is the one that I owned for the last 10 years and did all the miles in was a 512 TR. Nothing comes close. Mm. They're great value. They've got the most spectacular engine. It's a special car. It's a complicated mechanical package like nothing else. They're a real challenge to drive. Could I live one every day? Yeah, I could. I could live with it and you could maintain it. You'd probably end up, you know, throwing a new engine at it every 5 years, but so what? It's joyous and people respond so well to it. But it's a two-seater. And I think for the rest of my life, I couldn't live with a two-seater. I'd want to be able to have other people with me. I'd like taking people on the journey. Not many people like coming on the journey with me, but I've still got to give myself the option if someone would sit.
You never
there.
Know.
You never know, Chris. You're quite right. So I don't think you can choose an FF as a driving device because even though it looks better than the Lusso drives miles better for me because it's quiet. Inside the FF is frigging noisy at the back, whereas the Lusso is quiet. So I'm going to say that I can't have an FF because I would want the Lusso, but I don't want a Lusso because it doesn't look right, which is why I've got to have a manual 612 Scaglietti in the small wheels and a like a tobacco tan Curio, call it. That would do me just fine. And what I'd do is I'd be called out regularly to the King's Road where Edward Lovett's 275 would have shit itself again. Yeah. I'd have to get a lift. I'd have to give him a lift back to his pad in Fulham. That's what would happen.
The 612 is going to be one of those cars that we, well, not, I think we already do regret it. As a brand new car, I was selling these cars new and people were terrified of depreciation. I know we talked about depreciation last week or the week before, but they were terrified of depreciation. So we just did not sell enough of them. But imagine if there were a ton of beautiful spec'd 612s out there, manuals, one-to-ones, F1s, HGTC, HGTSs.
Santa.
Yeah, exactly. They were just, I just think they're a beautiful, beautiful car.
It has aged well. It's got the bonnet of a 275. It's got the same line.
No, it's better than that.
No, Manish and I think you've all chosen very well, but you're also all wrong.
No, well, I'm going to be more team like that. I think as a team, we've done a great job there. A little team hug. I think you've all done really, really well. Don't be harsh on yourselves. We're going to move on to a much more serious issue. And this is where I changed to my serious 9 o'clock news voice. Sunroofs. Do you like them or not? This is a very divisive issue. Manish, I know, has spent hours, well, months of his life deliberating on this particular issue. So I think now is the chance to give him the soapbox on which to stand and tell us, Manish, how do you feel about sunroofs?
They're just so 80s, aren't they?
Very harsh.
They are. What's the point? Basically, do people outside Britain have sunroofs? I've got all kinds of rhetorical questions about these. I just assumed because the weather was always rubbish. You know, you'd have this theoretical tin plate that kind of drops and slides back. And I don't know what you look at. What's the purpose? Is it just to allow bees in or something? I mean, there's just, what's the point of a sunroof? There were two ways, weren't there? I got the windy sunroof, or eventually it became the electric sunroof. And no is the simple answer. They're just wrong. They're just wrong.
I'm going to give the game away. I don't necessarily agree with Manish, but his reasons are so compelling. I might need to change my reasoning on this before I speak in a few minutes' time. Chris Cooper, please tell us where you stand on the issue.
I don't hate them or love them. I mean, they go back to sunroofs originally were there'd be a little sort, you'd have to literally pull them. You were like this sort of latch device and you would sort of pull them back. And then I remember when I was a child, friends' fathers would have a sunroof with a little handle. I thought, God, these are the kind of people who get things done. They've got a little windy. And then the electric buttony one happened. And then there's a sort of the shade over it or the ones that just go opaque. There are times, there was a really interesting period in the UK or British car culture. Even in the 90s, I remember my first BMW as a company car in 95. And I ordered it with a sunroof because the dealer didn't say to me, oh, you need air conditioning. And there was you had a sunroof. If it's a hot day, you have a sunroof. Now I can't imagine.
That is the point.
Yep. Doing that.
I didn't think about that.
That was that word. So, Chris Cooper, are you pro or are you anti?
I think I'd like to have, just sometimes to have a big one. So like those, the Defender, the current Defender has got one of those big canvas jobs. I think that's quite cool.
Oh, now you're straying into the Webasto.
No, it's not Webasto, not aftermarket. Okay. No, not sort of something done by Bauer convertible or one of those things. No, the Defender's got a big electric.
Oh, darling, that's a cabriolet. We're getting.
No, it's not a cabriolet. No, it's fixed roof. Big one. Yes.
Big one. Okay.
Neil
Clifford's about to, I think, explain to us that many cars were spec'd a certain way. Carry on.
Well, I think it's a wonderful bloody thing. You're such a miserable bastard, Manish. How can you dislike a sunroof? You don't even own a fucking car. Come on. We need to get this 456 bought.
Yeah,
we're going to put a sunroof in it ourselves.
The optional sunroof. I think Chris is definitely right. It is the replacement of air conditioning. It was for when you couldn't afford the air conditioning option, or many of those, I don't know, E30s. You didn't have the option of air conditioning, but you had the option of sunroof. And I think I don't know the stats, but I think it's partly a British thing. Whoever said that, Manish has now left.
No. You've really pissed him off. He's gone to buy a 456.
I think it's like the convertible. I think we are the highest percentage buyers of convertibles in Europe.
Yeah.
And I think probably the sunroof is the same, because we live in this grey world, much less sunshine than we have in the rest of Europe. And in fact, it's cooler, of course. Therefore, when the sun comes out, you want to look at the fucking thing. You want to undo that thing. You want to get some sunshine into your cabin. You want to whack some music on. Frankly, some of my best drives have been with a sunroof open. The bigger, the better. So W109, 70s Mercedes, massive electric sunroof, almost to the point you feel like the roof is coming off.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even the Wabasso. I've never had a Wabasso roof. I quite fancy having a Rover P6 with a Wabasso.
Oh, yeah. A mini
with the roof.
Oh, lovely. The first car I ever went in that I thought, shit, I'm really going to have to bloody get into this car thing, was a Granada Mark 1 Coupe 3-litre gear. You know, the two-door?
Yeah.
Yes.
With a manual sunroof.
Yeah.
It's the first electric windows I ever saw, actually.
That was technically a Mark II Granada.
It was. You're right. It was, because the Mark 1 was almost a console.
Correct. Yeah.
The Mark II in that metallic blue with the velour.
The gear coupe.
It was one of my mum's first, probably was a boyfriend. He was called an uncle, but he probably was a boyfriend. And you know what I mean? Meet your new uncle.
Yeah.
And
What's his name? Monty.
Well, it's not so bad if he's got a car with electric windows. Maybe I'm gonna have to like the guy. But I think sunroofs are brilliant. It's a very British thing.
I agree. We need to acknowledge the fact that we've had our first ever location change on the podcast. Manish has moved into the office.
He obviously needs to get close to the library for his sunroof references.
But I think he was so angry during that outburst about sunroofs, he covered the other monitor in phlegm and had to move somewhere else. So should we go for Edward now?
Well, first of all, to get to the point, I'm anti-sunroof because they're noisy and it's something to go wrong. And, you know, if you want a sunroof, just buy a cabriolet. However, backtrack now because after doing a bit of Googling and research to see, could I fall in love? Citroen DS23 Palace, full fabric sunroof.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Nice.
Yeah. Now... But that thing is, you're only really going to be driving around the countryside at slow speeds or through town where wind noise doesn't really matter. And that car is so cool. We should probably do a Citroen series at some point.
We'll do favourite Citroen at some point.
And then obviously 2CV, is that a sunroof?
No.
Yeah.
It's a canvas roof. It's different.
It's a canvas
roof. Is it? What do you mean it's canvas? It's still, the sun comes in. It's not a convertible.
Sun roof.
It's more of a convertible, really, because it's a canvas roof.
It's a Citroen special.
So the DS23 Palace with the fabric, is that a sunroof?
More sunroof.
Well, it's not a decap, is it? So it is. It's somewhere in the middle. I think we might be tying ourselves in knots here, and we can allow ourselves a little bit of leeway on the way that we define these things. Also, a lot of today,
as long as the sunroof is in a relatively slow car and is not electric, I am a fan of it. Yeah. The moment it's electric, it's going to break at some point, and I'm going to have a massive fucking bill to fix it because it'll be out of warranty, and I'll be pissed off and need to sell it.
he is a bit, you've got to admit, Edward is a bit of a method actor. He was so angry. God, you don't even have a car with a sunroof.
Well, I do, but if it breaks when it's out of warranty and I have a 10 grand bill because it's jammed open, I'll be furious.
Also, that's just his personality.
Yeah, that's who he is.
Manish, you didn't see yourself when you were...
You stormed off into another room.
I didn't. I was booted off the kitchen table. I was booted. My wife was doing all kinds of sign language. Get the fuck off the kitchen table.
No, she wasn't. She was saying, Manish, you fucking got it wrong about sunroof. Yeah. Where I come in.
The only bad sunroof.
Point of order. Point of order.
Glass ones.
Oh, they were.
Yeah, they're pointless. And the 993 sunroof was just too small.
Wait there. Right. First of all. Edward love it. I you're allowed to have that opinion, of course. We're all entitled to that. But you, I've just written in my notes here, you cited the reasons for not liking that they're noisy and they can go wrong. I think that you might need to look in the mirror there. If anything that's noisy and goes wrong, it's probably you. The ones that flip up like that always made me laugh because horrifically they were dealer fit. So the dealer would get an angle grinder, cut a hole in the roof, and make those in the dealership. Yeah. Why, if you bought one within 3 years, the rust would be extraordinary.
Yeah, Britax special.
Fucking terrible things. So yeah, you couldn't have one of them. I think I'm pro sunroofs. I think anything that allows you to add to the sensory appeal of driving. We've not talked about the smells of spring. You know, we go out, open that sunroof. You're a basic
wild garlic.
Open the window. You've got a window. Put your head out.
It's noisy and buffety. Yeah, that's not the same.
And also, do you remember
what's wrong with Edward tonight?
I don't know. I think he's menstruating or something. We were basically. I used to love for me in 1980s when BMW. For the 5 Series, the E28, and also the 3 Series, when the flap went up, it was only half. It didn't go up the whole thing. It pivoted in the middle, and that made it look like a little spoiler on the roof of the car.
Lovely,
I was just seeing like E28 and 5s piling down the M4 with that little. So I'm thinking, of course, downforce or something.
In qualifying mode.
So cool. So bit. I mean, I also think you can make a strong argument for the fact that a car that Chris Cooper just mentioned is the reason why sunroofs are so cool. Not because the Porsche 911, 964, 993, even the G Series had a sunroof that was too small because the roof space was so small. It allowed us to enjoy the most absurd positioning for a switch in any car at all. Do you remember where the sunroof was?
Underneath the Speedo.
Underneath the leading
That's
edge
right.
of the Speedo to yep. open the roof.
That's right. I mean,
it was worth it just for that
just
alone.
For that.
I also think there's a joy in when you've got a sunroof, you get the chance to try and tune your window position to get just the right airflow through the car, whether it's you know, ruffling your ears. There's a lot of joy to be had.
And I think, stop that thrumming you get. Yeah.
Yeah. I think. Yeah. I think Edward and Manish have got this badly wrong.
I do as well.
I think it might be, you know, I've never.
These are for anti-275 GTB 4 cameras. Don't you listen to them, Manish? They're all wrong.
I've never really liked them.
We're being ganged up on tonight. I don't like
it. I feel it.
I really do like a sunroof. But there is one exception, and that was the Peugeot 205's factory fit with the sucker thing that would hiss when it opened.
And those rails.
The rails were on the back.
Slidey thing, yeah.
Neil, I really hope that the answer to your next series of questions is not a sunroof,
Yeah.
It's like choosing a car from the 1980s when it's got to be in the 70s.
Yeah, no, exactly. We should call out the 928 GTS sunroof, which was officially the smallest sunroof. But the noise, because the switch was in the right place by the gear knob down there.
Yeah.
And when you press that button, it was like a James Bond, beautiful submarine tank opening, wasn't it? Yeah. That German engine.
Yeah.
It was only about that big. It was like a letterbox, but it was lovely.
And actually, you mentioned the other week, another great sunroof was the twin sunroofs in the E34 M5 Touring. Yeah. What about the Renault Espace that had the two flip-up sunroofs way down? I mean, I...
Mark 2 Discovery. Mark 1 Discovery.
Mark 1
and Mark 2, I think, both had the twin roofs,
Yep. Okay.
That was quite cool.
Now we're moving on. Edward Lovett's going to just apologise for choosing... No, I'm joking. What's the most embarrassing option you've ever had fitted to a car? A sunroof. Love it. Go away. You have to decide what the most embarrassing option you've ever had fitted to a car is.
Who?
Well, that's a question for all of us to answer, isn't it?
Fine. Chris Harris, give us your answer.
Okay, I'll give you your answer now. I think, and I don't have a great story here to tell. I've thought about it. I've not ordered that many cars from you. It reminded me that most of the new cars I bought were already sitting in a showroom, and I bought them because they were there. I've not specced that many cars.
Mm-hmm.
And I think on a simple level, I once bought a Mercedes estate car, and I ordered it with blacked out glass. I don't know why I did that, because I hate it. So I'm ashamed of that. That should never have happened.
That's a crime.
A crime. But I think I'll twist it and say I narrowly avoided buying a new car, and it was a BMW, it was a long time ago, and they tried to charge me for floor mats, and I had a massive argument in the dealership. I just said, I think that when you supply me a car, you probably owe me a pair of mats at the front, and they tried to put the floor mats for £75 plus VAT on the bill, and I told them to foxtrot Oscar, yes. and I wouldn't buy them, so I deleted the mats. And then 6 months later, there was a hole in the main carpet. So I bought some mats to cover the hole.
That went well.
Yeah.
That's about as far as I go.
I suspect you're going to have better stories than that. I'm just going to get myself a drink of water. I'm getting a bit hoarse.
Manish?
I have a paucity of new car stories, but I specified one option, which everybody said would be embarrassing and ridiculous and superfluous. And my wife is actually foremost in this criticism, but actually turned out to be very good. The only reason I bought a car living in central London is because when our son was one, we used to go on weekends to my wife's sister's. She lives in Middle Barton. So we used to drive to, we used to take the train from Marylebone to Bicester. And when my son was one, we had a pram, all the stuff that you have when you have a one-year-old, plus what you've taken for the weekend. We were standing on Bicester Station. We were literally standing Bicester Station, and I didn't know about Bicester Village.
Yeah, Bicester Village too.
Every Sunday, basically, the entire population of Shanghai goes to Bicester Village, and they just fill massive bags with bizarre clothes. And we were just standing there. So the train came in, we got in, had to stand all the way to Marylebone, kid crying in pram. And I just thought, I've got to get a car. So I went online, and Audi let you buy your cars online. So I spec'd my car out online. And my wife was sort of looking over my shoulder as I did this. And I said, we're going to put a fridge in the glove compartment.
Oh,
good idea.
It's like, why are you doing that? Never going to use that. This is the most ridiculous thing that you've ever put in a car. But guess what? There is just one thing about that car. Cold milk for child, cold water for me, and chocolates that don't melt.
Yes.
You go on journeys. So fridge in car, not embarrassing. I got a bit henpecked, but I won.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very wise decision. Chris Cooper, you're doing that hopping thing where I can't tell if you need a wee or you want to talk.
No, it's age. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's more of an accessory than an option.
Strange. Where are you going with this? Is this one of your toy-based stories, or are we talking about cars?
None of those. No, that was you last week. When I was a student in Portsmouth Poly, I was the head of the Portsmouth Poly Motor Club. And we used to organise navigational rallies and these sort of 12-car plot and bash things. And then one day we actually organised a proper MSA-sanctioned road rally in the days you could do this thing. Real people turned up with Mark 1 and Mark 2 escorts and so forth. And I thought, I need to sort out the lights on I had a 1967 Mini Cooper. So I put some Lucas 2020 branded spotlights on the front, which I bolted to the bit, just the bonnet, sort of the ledge on the, so it just rattled and vibrated like that. But I thought, I need, because I'm going to do some high speed reversing, because I'm such a skilled driver, I need a proper reversing light. So I drilled a hole in the boot lid and put a spotlight on the boot lid pointing backwards. But I never got around to putting a bulb in it or wiring it up. But I really liked the way it looked.
They do look good.
So I just left it there.
So did it look a bit? Years. It looked a bit Hopkirk, did it?
It looked very like in a moment's notice, the thing's going to spin on the sixpence, and I'll be off in a different direction. That's the guy who kind of gets things done. Look, he's got that big spotlight on the boot. How fast will he be reversing? You know, young ladies of Portsmouth Poly must have thought we'll have to form a queue for his charm and advances. So it was a serious option, an accessory, because I never actually put a bulb in or wired it up because I didn't know how to. So that was the silliest accessory.
There it is.
That's it. I had, actually, mine was slightly higher up.
I do own a Mini with a reversing.
You see, you got that wrong. The light needs to be slightly higher up. So but from mine, the side.
Mine works.
Yeah, that's not the point.
Got a bulb in it.
That's not the point.
I don't think,
Mr.
C, I don't think you can tell us what a disaster it was and then offer an opinion on where they should be on someone else's Mini.
That is quite brave, isn't it? Brave on reflection.
I think Neil can safely say he's got a better one than you. Right, Neil Clifford, off you go.
I ordered a Porsche, and obviously it was quite a posh Ponzi Porsche, limited edition-y thing. And you had all these options of lightweight, lightweight battery, single mass flywheel. Can probably guess the car.
I know which option you're going to talk about as well.
Oh no, actually I wasn't, but I'll talk about that. That's even stupider, actually. Stripes or no stripes, air conditioning or no air conditioning, and obviously the real purist would have gone lightweight battery, single mass flywheel, no air conditioning, no stereo. But actually, I did two funny things. I don't regret any of them. I tend not to have any regrets in life, apart from not seeing Kate Bush live. And one of the things was the lithium battery, because I thought, oh, that sounds really fucking great. I'm going to get the lithium battery. It's like 800 quid extra. But when I went to pick it up at the dealer, they said, just to let you know, if you don't drive that car and start it, in 3 days, the battery will be flat and you won't be able to drive it. So I said, oh, for fuck's sake, that's a pain in the ass. I'll buy a normal battery. So I've driven that car around for 5 years with the lightweight lithium battery in a box in the car. I then fitted the standard battery as well. So the car is actually heavier than even if you didn't order the lightweight battery, you had the normal one. And the other point of that car is, and I don't regret this because I do have the coolest sandwich box hole of any car, as I did it without stereo, which clearly is quite a stupid thing to do. But I just thought, actually, this is a great car. I'm going to do a spec that's better than everyone else's. I went for air conditioning because I thought, shit, if I'm driving to Le Mans or driving somewhere, I really don't want a car without air conditioning, particularly when it's free. And there was no sunroof option, as you would know, Ed, on that car. But it's got no stereo, and it's got the lightweight battery, but also the normal battery in the front at the same time.
Ridiculous. Ed would love it. This could go on for ages.
It actually could go on for ages. Yeah. I'll try not to let it. And actually, Chris, you talking about the hole in your boot just made me thinking back in the day when there was a very sort of wealthy local family who wanted to take delivery of their new 540 estate or something like that.
Ooh, cool car. Ooh.
They would bring you their mascot so you could bolt it into the middle of the bonnet. You imagine species? That today. Well, number one, I think it's illegal now to have a mascot in the middle of your bonnet. But you imagine asking a dealer to, could you drill a hole in the carbon fiber bonnet to stick my mascot
was it,
in
was it a horse or and a dog?
People had all sorts of things. It was sort of.
Did you ever get a little golden penis with a crown on it?
Because yes, I've got that. Yes, I have it fitted somewhere else though. It's in my air conditioned glove box.
we should bring back
I don't make mistakes, Chris, as you know. So I haven't ever ordered an incorrect new car. But I've noted a few down here, and I also found one on the line, which is a Bentley Bentayga Breitling clock. Was £132,000 as an option. I think it's a tourbillon with diamond hour markers. That could be a mistake. A couple of mistakes that are currently being made by people that order cars is the ones that are being forced to take the GT3 or GT2 RS watch with the car. Come on, do you really want that?
It's a bad
Chris. What's your view on chocolate teapots, i.e. carbon fiber wheels?
Yeah, I'm not sure about it. I don't know.
They're really not, there's no failure mode in carbon fiber. If you ding
them and it's 15 grand a corner or something.
Go when you don't, it looks like they're fine and then they just go and that's bad.
Yeah. But this is a pretty inexpensive mistake, but a painted key.
Yeah.
I've got that.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the painted key, because especially if you use it, the paint starts to chip away and then you have to give this sort of rancid painted key back to the dealer.
Not if you have it wrapped as well.
You wrap the key, do you? You have it painted, you've got BPF on your key.
People are painting keys now because the level of insecurity is that when they go to the pub, they've got to have the key. Same as the thing as probably their second.
I think it's just trying to make the key more interesting.
I do actually, it does remind me that there were always some great stories at certain car makers of vehicles that would become press cars because the order process had gone so wrong, or someone internally had got so out of shape with the ordering of a car, it ended up being a press car. Sometimes it was also just belligerent people that were fucked off when they got fired. They managed to squeeze an order in before they went. There was a Panamera, current shape Panamera, 5 years ago that was ordered in Guards Red with a red leather interior. The Porsche retail group couldn't sell, so it had to become a press car. There was a famous, and it's still doing the rounds. Bentley put a yellow Conti T on its fleet in 2000. Because it was special ordered by someone in the Middle East, and they went pop, and Bentley just couldn't sell the fucking thing, so they made it a press car, and we all drove around in it for 6 months. There were lots of mistakes. I remember BMW had some hilarious stuff go wrong with some M3s. They just came through. What have you done? Laguna Seca Blue with Laguna Seca Blue leather.
That's a great color combination.
At the time, no one thought it,
and they don't now.
There's a peculiarly British, I think it's a British thing, and I hesitate to say this because I know that lots of people like this, and it does seem to be increasingly popular, and that's drug dealer glass, privacy glass. No. The reason I don't like it is because it just spoils the look of the car. Nobody designing a car said, do you know what will make it look even better? But kind of make it look a little bit like a van. I mean, Monkey, you and I have done this. I'm sure others, you know, if we're looking for a previously enjoyed car and it's got privacy glass, I'll say, okay, can you put some clear glass back in it? And the husband looked at you and said, what's the matter with you? I said, I'm sorry, it's either that or I'm not buying it. So that sort of, there are some cars now, even a Golf GTI, you can't specify, at least in the UK, a Golf GTI with clear glass. It has either...
You can't with the G-Wagon.
Yeah, I mean, Golf is different.
I had to buy my separate glass from Gratz and have it brought into the country, that was about the same as buying a new car.
Yeah. I've WhatsApped you a link, and we won't talk about it on here, but I'm sure there's some regret in that choice. But okay. you have to go inside the car to discover the problems.
Okay, we'll do that in a minute.
I think it's known in those rare cars are known in the trade, or certainly in my little world, as white dog shit rare.
Because That's true.
White dog shit was very popular in the 70s, but you don't see it anymore, do you? I don't know.
I think it's a dietary change. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't eat bones anymore, dogs, do they? That's probably really.
We've got artisan dog food now.
Yes.
I'm now going to do something I've always wanted to do. I'm going to segue from Neil Clifford talking about white dog shit. I'm going to ask Manish whether he's got any classical music for us this week.
Yes, I semi-classical. I played it to you last week.
Oh, no, I'm not going to. We've got to do Two Car Garage.
Well, you don't have to end in music. You've started it now.
Okay, we'll do music first. We'll do Two Car Garage at the end. Sorry to interrupt your flow, Manish. Carry on.
That's all right. When we were in Bologna last week, I think I played it to you. I think, for me, it's a very lyrical, beautiful piece. Starts with a very simple piano, a bit like an Eric Satie piece, but then it builds and builds and builds, like Michael Nyman, who composed lots and lots of music for the cinema. And it's Ludovico Einaudi, and it's a piece called Experience. And it's just beautiful and lyrical, and it's Chris and me in a Ferrari with President Montezemolo in the back seat going, I've got plenty of leg room here, look at this. As we go through the little trattorias of Bologna, hopefully, you know, pigeons flying, whole thing shot by Ridley Scott. That's the plan.
And he's saying to Manish, thank fuck, this isn't a 2754 cam. Neil Clifford, some music.
I'm a 90s boy completely. What's the best band in the 90s? Without doubt, no argument, Oasis.
I mean, half the country is just turned off.
No, well, okay, I like that. I do like.
When were
like
Spice that. Girls? What era were they?
Just to be clear, I was an anti-Blur, but I think Oasis nailed it. They produced all the best anthems, and the thing they did really, 94, they blew away all of Madonna and fucking Phil Collins and Michael Bolton and fucking Lisa Stansfield, all that
shit.
Those
are low bars, but yes, granted.
That early 90s, it's a bit like the arrival of punk and blowing away the 70s sort of flares, really. I think Oasis did the same thing. I was traveling in 94, so I didn't really get the Definitely Maybe album, but I came back to...
What's the story?
On Berwick Street. And even when I walk down Berwick Street, which I do a lot, the whole album goes through my head. And it would be easy to choose Wonderwall, because probably it is the best song of Oasis. We all want to sing to it. You know, when you're drunk, it's even better. But I chose Cast No Shadow, which is an amazing song. It's actually written about Richard Ashcroft. So listen to the lyrics.
The Verve,
yeah. The song is about Richard Ashcroft. They were good mates. Noel and Richard were good mates. And it's all about the torment of a man living his life, trying to do his best. But, you know, it's never so easy sometimes. But anyway, brilliant album, brilliant band. And, Oasis, Cast No Shadow.
I'm going to be listening to some Oasis tomorrow. Do love it. Also, but then now I'm thinking about The Verve. Jesus Christ, Sonnet. What a song that is. Here we go. Edward Lovett.
Chris said I wasn't in a very good mood. And also, I started this before we started recording, saying I hadn't thought about my music choice. But I'm going to go with Beach Boys and Good Vibrations. Oh, no. Just to make you... I'm in a good mood.
A solid response there. From
driving in Southern California in his 275 GTB quad cam, windows down.
Down to Malibu.
Absolutely. Yeah. With the Beach Boys playing that.
As he sees Neil Clifford go past in a short wheelbase and goes, oh, damn.
Yeah, no,
with a sunroof.
458, because I've still got 8 cylinders and he's got 3 or something going on.
Chris Cooper.
Well, I've got 3 now.
You're allowed one. Stop it.
So anything by Brian Wilson, it's got to be brilliant. Champagne Supernova, I think, is a great way to start. But the one I kind of, it's a bit cliche, but we haven't done it. And I just love it. Every time I think, God, that's amazing.
Free Bird by Lynyrd Skynyrd is a great song. A great track in a car on a journey. I was driving when I drove back down the M1 yesterday. It was a lot of football crowds on the road and lots of mad Sunday afternoon driving. And I just came on my iPhone, just random stuff. And I thought, that is bloody impressive. We must have had that.
But that's the top guitar solo.
At the Scramble, at the coffee run on Saturday, the playlist was playing. So I heard some of our...
The real playlist.
Not all over the airfield.
Oh, there was there was a bloke walking around going, I like this playlist because it's not got any of Neil Clifford's music on it. Yeah. He wasn't saying that.
I was convinced Ed had deleted all my songs, and then we found the fakey person that has...
There was a bloke with a collecting cards t-shirt going around. This has got none of Neil's music in it. It's really good.
Yeah, that was him. That's that bloke, CCOJ on fucking.
So sometimes you choose a song and you're already... Actually, I had thoughts about my song for this week, but then something pops up on the radio and it just melts your heart and you go, oh, okay, I've not heard that for a while. And I was in the car yesterday with my youngest and Razor Light's America came on. And I just think the beginning of that is just drags at your heart a bit. It's a lovely, lovely intro. It's a great song.
Razor Lights. I need to put that on my playlist.
Fantastic vocal. Great piece as well. It's a great song. So there you go. Razor Light, America for me this week. Thank you to my co-host, Manish Pandey.
No. You're getting it wrong, Chris. We've got two car garage.
We need a professional to do this, don't we?
I think you do. It's already been a long week, and it's Monday.
I think he's got a bad shoulder. He's been doing a lot of stretching, and
I've got
It's been a long week.
I've done some exercise. I got a side strain. Hold on. Also, my eldest child is 18 today, so it's slightly blown my head.
Congratulations! Yeah.
He's asked me if he can buy a burger. I'm going to say yes. So here we go. I'm going to read out the two car garage for you.
Asking you if he can buy a bird.
A burger.
Oh, right. Burger. Okay, fine.
For the sake, we're not all like the Lovitz. Right. Here's the burger. That's hard.
That might be what they do for their 18th in Bristol.
Oh, God.
Choose a bird, whichever one you want. I'll pay.
This is heavily involved, this one. And I know it's long and verbose because it was written by Mr. Neil Clifford.
I'll put some full stops in there for you.
I'll choose when to breathe. You have been made redundant with a big payoff from Credit Suisse, where you were a high-flying investment banker. Let's start positively. Your mortgage is paid, your pension's full, and the kids have finished their Oxbridge degrees. So it's the perfect time to take a year out and travel Europe with the wife and the two boys. You've allocated a very realistic budget of £500,000 to buy
We're on the pulse of the nation.
To buy two new cars. That's what I thought. A big, luxury, family, comfortable motor and a wonderful sports car that you've always promised yourself. You plan to drive them 15,000 miles in 12 months. Did you just look in the mirror at this one or not?
And want to minimise
the depreciation when you sell them in 2024 on the best auction platform ever seen in the UK, collecting cars. So here we go. I'm going Chris Cooper.
So I forgot something in the man cave last week. I forgot a mezzanine floor. I had a mezzanine floor in the man cave. And Finley, one of my sons said, why didn't you mention the mezzanine floor? So I said, I mentioned the mezzanine floor. So these two cars, there's only one car right now that I think would be comfortable and luxurious enough for a family of four to travel around Europe and pretty much get the same money back. It's got to be a Range Rover.
Yeah.
Because they are still going for overs. The current model Range Rover, they can't make enough of them. And Range Rover V8s are going for way, way over. So I think if you got one today, some cancelled order, you could definitely get your money back and perhaps even a little bit more in a year's time because the supply is so small. The other one's quite interesting. So I slightly cheated. I never do that, I know. I reckon...
Seven more cars or something.
No, because I just think an Aston Martin V8 Vantage pre-90 that had been beautifully rebuilt. You wouldn't go for 350, but hey, you know, You've just been overdone from Credit Suisse.
They just said two new cars.
That's what I'm saying. It's been rebuilt. It's essentially new.
I think we'd give him that.
Yeah, and this is
he's going to regret it. Neil, I've known him
longer than you, Neil. If you give him an inch, he's a fucker. This one, he'll.
If he broke down with Edward and his 275, though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he wouldn't do that. No, I promise we won't break down. Anyway, I'm a banker. You know, my word is my bond.
Okay, you can have both.
But 6.3 Aston Martin V8 Vantage.
Yeah,
you can have both. But remember, I officially you're on notice here, Cooper, because you're taking the piss in the two cars.
Okay. Is that track limits?
And yeah, I'm going to fleece you when you come to part exchange it as well.
Manish, what are your two cars?
Can I start off by saying that I didn't see the word new.
At least I'm honest.
Well, and also I did a quick trawl, and the average salary in dollars of an MD at Credit Suisse last year was $585,249.
Yes, but he's a partner, this guy.
Yeah, MD's, plus options, plus your share.
No, no, I got it. And he must be about 50 years old. I was just thinking, because a friend of mine did actually start his banking career at Credit Suisse, and they were particularly arrogant in the 80s. And I remember he got out-arroganted by a maitre d' at a steak restaurant on Charlotte Street. Wow. I remember he said, right, we'll meet and we'll have lunch. And I said, have you got a reservation? He said, no. I'm at CSFB, don't worry about it. So there he went in his blue bloody suit. I stood with him. I thought we were pretty smartly dressed. The restaurant was completely empty. And the maitre d' said, do you have a reservation? And he said, no. And then the maitre d' looked into this empty restaurant and he said, as you can see, we are fully booked. He basically told us to piss off. So the two cars, because I didn't see the word new, I found a 1972 Maserati Bora. That's not going to lose any miles at all. It's never going to do 15,000 miles. I know, but it's so beautiful. And I'm going to drive in that. But the other car I think you'll both like, actually, and let me off, is these remade Alvis Graber Super Coupe.
Yeah,
£330,000.
That's an interesting one. Yeah,
I just think they're like Neil's most beautiful Bristols on some kind of acid. I think they look beautiful. The inside, they're not overpowered. I think we wouldn't have any problems driving that thing around, and I think it would make its money back, wouldn't it?
It would. Well, Manish, if you drove it around Europe, everybody would want one.
Such a great looking car.
Manish, because Chris Cooper has set an example of having no discipline whatsoever, we have to give you those.
Yeah, I'm hardly pushed to judge.
Frankly, we've lost control of this room now, and it's embarrassing.
Wait, is the Bora a piece of shit? Because you
no, it's fucking brilliant.
I think it's
not new, but then
they're not easy things, but they're sensational. You can have one because ultimately Chris Cooper has caused problems here. We're going to have some words about this, right? Neil Clifford, what are you going to have? An SR71 and Saturn fucking 5?
Yeah, I'm going to have a Lightning. And a helicopter. No, Chris is right. You get a Range Rover. It's the only modern car. Yes, you're right. You can't get one anyway. I'd have the long wall base hybrid, actually. I've gone off piste on that. I'd have the hybrid just so when I'm in Siena or I'm in Palermo, I can get up early in the morning and I'm on electric and I just cruise out of the
city. They've just improved it as well.
They have. Yeah. So I'd have the hybrid long wheelbase, not the 7-seat one, but just because I only got two kids, no cockapoos this time. So I'd have just the loads of leg room for my big, tall, rugby playing, handsome, pain in the ass sons that are sat in the back, and then I would have 350 grand. And you know what? I'd buy something English. I know I probably wouldn't do this in reality. This is my make-believe life. I'd get that new DBS 770 final edition.
Oh, that's a good call.
Because actually, it's a little bit less leery than an 812 GTS. It's sort of a bigger, cruisier GT thing than the Sport Classic 911. It's probably the first pretty modern new Aston I've liked for a long time because it's got those wheels from the Victor.
Yeah.
I mean, the dash is still shit because it's like looks like 10 years old. It's got Mercedes sat nav from 1998, But I think the thing, it looks lovely. And you do it in non-metallic navy or British Racing green and a lovely Koyo leather. And when you're driving around, I don't know, wherever you are, where are you, in the Pyrenees or going through Tuscany or down to Sicily, you've lost your wife anyway because you've been driving too fast. You want to be in a British car. You want to be a British cool dude.
I'm with you.
So I'd have the new Aston 770 Final Edition and a Range Rover.
Yeah, you definitely do your boots in that as well.
I would lose 100 grand on the Aston is the problem. Yeah.
Edward Lovett, are you going to behave or are you going to be sensible here?
No, I'm going to be sensible.
Right.
Boring.
I really think the current Flying Spur is a really handsome car.
Mm.
And HR Owen have got one for sale. Neil, you need to go on your and have a look at this online in a minute. It's sage green with Cumberland green leather.
It's a lot of green.
I'm gonna go and bid them in the nuts because no one's gonna want to buy that car. So I'll buy it cheap, and so I reckon I can run that pretty well for the next 12 months. And then Neil, I knew you would say it. You'd choose something different, but you'd have to say it. But 812 GTS, it's a car that often winks at me. And Chris, I know it winks at you as well, but hopefully you've got a backup plan.
It's a good car. If everyone's lost their shirt on a normal 812, but if you get the GTS, then you're not going to lose too much.
Well, funny enough, they had lost their shirt, but they've all put their shirt back on because the residuals on all of these cars have really tightened up.
As long as you didn't buy it new, you're all right.
Well, exactly, with a lot of fancy paint and all that jazz.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, obviously, Lovett's completely bollocks me here, so I did a bit of rethinking quite quickly. First of all, he's gone for the wrong Bentley because he should have gone to Crewe and found the last unregistered Mulsanne Speed that was being sold this year. So I think to go around Europe in a quintessentially British car, you can't go around in a rebodied Phaeton or a Panamera, which is what that Flying Spur is. A great car, but it's not a Mulsanne. That would be such a cool way to travel. And they are immensely good at speed, having sat four up doing over 180 for mile after mile in a blue one that I had years ago. So I'd go for the Mulsanne. And I wanted an 812 GTS, but I can't turn up when I meet Edward down in Cap Ferrat for a late breakfast. I can't turn up in the same fucking car because Lovett will be there looking all ginger and smart.
EL77.
Then I'll know that we're seeing Clifford later and he's in his DBS 770 having shit himself nine times in the rain the night before because the traction control was in the wrong setting and it's got full code brown.
Manish and Chris didn't make it because their cars broke down on the way.
They broke down.
It's harsh.
No, my answer is this. I'm going to go for a 296 Spider because I love the 296. I think it's a great car. It's fast, great to drive. I think it's very pretty. But looking at my budget, I've got a bit of money left over. So I've written down here is I've got 50k left over. So I'm renting.
Have you got money left over?
I have got money left over.
What for? How much is a Mulsanne Speed last of the line?
I've paid nothing for that because that's back at the factory.
Okay.
So I've got a bit of money left, and I'm going to hire. We're going to leave France. We're going to go to Mugello, which I've hired for a day. And we're going to spend the rest of the day with my podcast pals wrecking the rear tires of my Ferrari 296.
Yes.
Then we're going to have an excellent pasta lunch and discuss our general greatness. All right. So I think that's a good way to end.
I think that's a very good way.
A podcast I've tried to end three times already, for which I apologise. Thank you very much for listening. Please tune in next week.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.